Continuing a series of talks on guru issues. I'll be continuing in this talk to speak on introductory topics before we get into the nitty-gritty. It's not as directly blissful as discussing the names, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as, for instance, in my series of talks on Sri Vishnu Sahasranama. But it is important and it is required, and the same Vaishnava Acharyas who have commented on the blissful names, forms, qualities, and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead have within their writings, and certainly Srila Prabhupada and our Param Guru Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in their speeches addressed various problems facing Vaishnav society at their specific times, and not least and not avoiding topics of difficulties with gurus and guru-disciples relationships. As I said in the last talk, there is an often unspoken but widespread feeling within ISKCON, which is difficult to define exactly what ISKCON is. If we say there's ISKCON, there are the temples, and then there's the diaspora and the congregation. But within ISKCON, there is a widespread feeling that something is awry, something is amiss. And even if you think, well, no, there's no real problem, there's a few small problems here and there, nothing to make a big complaint about, what's the point of all these talks? But even those who think that everything's basically okay and hurry bowl and just chant Hare Krishna and be happy, great, I'm all for it, chant Hare Krishna and be happy, but we want to see others happy also. And we can live in denial of the fact that there have been and are many, many devotees who came in good faith to Krishna consciousness, but who are presently estranged from the movement or having difficulties to have doubts and confusion, difficulties to understand what's going on various issues, including the guru issues. Maybe I have jaundiced vision. If I have, then so many others also have, and that in itself should be seen as a problem. Anyway, I'm not going to focus on so many issues here, on guru issues. And yeah, even if you think that I'm off, and anyone who thinks that there's anything wrong to the extent that we need to discuss all these things openly must be wrong. Well, like I say, there are a huge number of disaffected devotees, and I don't think we should neglect such topics in the name of it'll bring bad publicity and it may disturb some people's faith. I mean, it's already people's faith is disturbed. And those who are living in a naive bliss bubble, it's quite possible that their faith also may become disturbed in due course, because we've seen so many. In fact, many of those who become most disaffected due to guru issues were those who previously were in a naive bliss bubble of see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil, and just pretend everything's completely okay. Of course, within and around ISKCON, there is a wide spectrum of attitudes concerning guruship, from those who unquestioningly accept everything, or at least they show themselves to unquestioningly accept everything. It can be difficult for newcomers. They may feel constrained to openly express doubts. But there are those, yeah, I'm saying there's a whole spectrum from those who are, everything's okay, to those who are bitter and contemptuous, and there are all kinds of shades in between. And it's at both ends of the spectrum, or from both ends of the spectrum, I'm likely to get flack. Why are you talking such things in public? It'll disturb people's faith. And why don't you concentrate on something more positive? To the other end, that you're a guru, therefore you are bogus. There are those who say like that, that anyone who is taking the role of a guru is bogus. All gurus are bogus, unless they're on the level of Srila Prabhupada. And it may be they think that no one's on the level of Srila Prabhupada if they're in the Ritvik camp, or that their own preferred guru, Rasik guru or whatever, is on that level and none others. Now, it could be said that I'm a fault finder to even take so seriously and discuss such things. But as Srila Prabhupada often told us, and Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, this Krishna consciousness is a science. It's supposed to be understood in a scientific way. There are symptoms, there are characteristics of pure devotees, which are described in Shastra, and the symptoms of pure devotional service. And we're supposed to use our intelligence to take this knowledge. After all, guru means he gives knowledge. We're supposed to absorb that knowledge and apply that to understand what we see all around us. And we understand from Shastra, and we should understand from common sense, pratyaksha, seeing what we see, that there's always a gap between the ideal and the actual in this world. Not always in the case of pure devotees, but they may not be so many. Most of the people who come to this movement are not pure devotees. They're not pure in the sense that they're not liberated persons who've come to this world to uplift others, but they're in the camp of those who are to be uplifted. Now, they may be considered pure devotees if they take to Krishna consciousness very seriously. There are levels of pure devotees. One who takes to Krishna consciousness very seriously and sincerely can be called a pure devotee. That's within the definition allowed within the science of Krishna consciousness, as given to us by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. But still struggling with anarthas. So we're supposed to use our intelligence to analyze and understand who's who and what's what, and not simply be naive or sentimental, not simply accept on the basis of institutional pressure or blind faith, institutional convention. So, in the upcoming series of talks, I want to discuss some of the issues concerning guruship, and also extensively look at some of the statements in Shastra and some of the statements of Srila Prabhupada. I'm going to be doing a lot of reading also. I want to discuss this in a sober manner, so that we can all be benefited by such discussions. Siddhanta balaya chitena karaha alosh iha hoite krishne lage sudira manosh. This should be the motto of this series of talks. Do not be lazy in the matter of understanding the conclusions of devotional service, for by applying one's consciousness to understanding such matters, the mind becomes strongly attached to Krishna. So I'm saying there are two extremes there are two extremes in the spectrum. There's on one side it's blind following, promoting blind following. That's unhealthy, actually. To say Gurudev ki jai and blindly follow can completely spoil your spiritual life, depending on how the guru is situated. But it's also unhealthy to have a fault-finding attitude. That is also warned against, actually more. So it's a fine balance that we're enjoined to see through the eye of Shastra, but also with a generous eye. We can take from Srila Prabhupada, he had a generous eye in as much as he did overlook many failings of his disciples. So we shouldn't be biased or partisan or fanatical. All the gurus are completely bogus. Someone can make a clip of that, a 2-second clip, and send it around. Or we don't want to be like a prosecutor and analyze each word and each sentence. Someone may make a mistake in something they say, and, oh, that proves you're bogus. Generosity of heart. Udaradhi. We've heard this term, udaradhi. It means to have a generous outlook. And even some of the devotees who assumed the role of a guru did not live up to it. They are or were devotees. They were trying in good spirit. I believe we should think like that. It may have been mixed with some material desires for fame and position. They may have been carried away by the power that came in their hands, but we should think that they took to Krishna consciousness in good spirit. Now, apart from talking about worrisome gurus, my experience is that in being in the role of a guru, which we should understand the role of a guru is the servant of his guru and the previous acharyas, and particularly within ISKCON, that means a servant of Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas and a servant of his mission. So I'm one of the gurus within ISKCON. I offer initiation as a servant of Srila Prabhupada. I offer initiation to others. But while we're talking in this series of talks about one of the subjects or a central theme throughout will be problems that have been generated and are being generated in guru-disciple dealings, I can say from my side that some disciples are big headaches also. There's supposed to be a testing period between approaching guru for initiation and taking initiation. Hari Bhakti Vilas says 1 year, in which it's actually stated that the disciple should live with the guru. I'll get through to that. That's coming up later to discuss that in more detail. But even then, sometimes some gurus within our movement, they have a 5-year waiting list for initiation. And even then, after someone may wait 5 years, get initiated, and even then, as a disciple, just fade away or go away. And so you can be highly selective, and that's not a bad idea, but we want quality and quantity. We want to spread the movement very widely, which means taking risks in initiating devotees. Srila Prabhupada wanted quality and quantity. Krishna wants both quality and quantity. But there's no guarantee. Even if you initiate just a few and you think you'll have high quality, there's no guarantee how things will turn out, how disciples will follow or not follow or misrepresent you. That just came to my mind. There was one within the Gaudiya Math, one of the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. There was one sannyasi who was very, very strict. He had very few disciples. I'm not going to say the name now. He had very few disciples because he was very strict. He was an amazing scholar, wrote many, many important books, which are in Bengali, which are not, I've got all of them, but they're hardly circulated or appreciated. And he passed his final few years living at his small mat in Mayapur with one disciple, who he eventually gave sannyas. He was a brahmachari. And then that sannyasi passed away, and naturally the disciple inherited the mat. And before long, he had a woman living with him. And all the Gaudiya Maths around, they're all in an uproar. You can't do this. He's a sannyasi living alone in the mat. It's just a small mat with one woman who's, if he wasn't supposed to be a sannyasi, I think they're just living like husband and wife. I don't know if they had any children yet. But they couldn't do anything about it. But the point I'm making is he was so strict, he had one disciple who could take his strictness. But then after Maharaj passed away, he just really flunked it. And maybe in the West you can't appreciate how bad this might be seen. Sannyasi falling down. And especially in Mayapur, when all the mats are there and everyone knows everyone else, at least they know of you. There are so many mats now, it's hard to keep up with them. But and especially his guru had such a high reputation, so respected for being so scholarly and strict and renounced. So what's the point I'm making? I'm making the point that disciples, they can cause you a lot of headaches. If you have many disciples, the more you have, the more the chances, and it's quite likely some are just going to go away and just don't care about, even if you've invested a lot of time and energy. Even Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, one of his very first disciples, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was later very upset with him, because he left shortly before Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati left this world. That disciple left the mat and went home and got married. Siddhanta Saraswati wasn't happy with that at all, after he'd invested so much time in nurturing that devotee in Krishna consciousness. So some disciples will go away. Some may insult you, deliberately disobey you, make politics against you, speak lies about you, make court cases against you or your disciples, false cases, openly rebel, attempt to manipulate or exploit or cheat. It's no joke. As one of my godbrothers recently stated in regard to the service of a guru, he said, it's not a job for the faint-hearted. It's not a service for the faint-hearted. It's can be very difficult. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was traveling in South India with one companion, Kala Krishnadas, who was recommended to him by Nityananda Prabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nityananda Prabhu had faith in this Kala Krishnadas. He went with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was seduced by the prospect of enjoying women and left Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's inconceivable. You have so many devotees, they want the association of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he's got exclusive access to him 24 hours, day after day after day, seeing his person. He should have made a diary, transcendental diary. Like, there is a myth that Govinda Karmaka traveled with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and made a diary, and that comes out as one of the unauthorized biography, but it's bogus. And anyway, Kala Krishnadas, just see how strong is Maya. How strong is Maya? Kshurasya dhara nishita duratyaya durgangpatas tatkavayo vadanti. The Upanishad says that spiritual life is like a razor's edge. It's very difficult to traverse, say those who know what they're talking about. And we've seen some devotees, it's not a job for the faint-hearted. We've seen some devotees who have collapsed emotionally under the stress and strain of sharing so many people's worries. I mean, that may be just one, there may be multiple factors in why some devotees who accepted the service of being guru in ISKCON just emotionally found it very, very difficult and struggled with that. So what should be our attitude? There, but for the grace of God, go I. It's an English saying that, okay, you see someone else has got in a very difficult situation, but you don't think, I'm beyond it. I'm so strong. I'm so great. See, he fell down. I can't fall down. I'm a great devotee. But we there, but for the grace of God, go I. It's an English saying. English people used to be almost to a man Christians. They really believed in it. And there may have been a few here and there, like David Hume, he was Scottish, anyway, who weren't, but it was considered scandalous among the majority of people in England to openly say you don't believe in God. So there, but for the grace of God, go I. It's just say it's Krishna's mercy. Please save me. We're all weak in front of Maya. But then you may say, well, that's the point. Gurus are not supposed to be weak in front of Maya. Okay, we'll discuss that. We'll get through to gurus are supposed to be perfect. That's the idea. So yeah, there but for the grace of God go I. So Pratana Karaya Shada Narottama Das. Narottam Das is always praying. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Dasharanu Dash. Pratana Karaya Shada Narottama Das. Narottam Das always prays for the opportunity to serve the servants of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we always have to be praying and following the process. And long ago, I remember that this was in the 1980s, one of the spectacular guru fall downs that happened in the 1980s. Spectacular means the bigger they are, the harder they fall. It's a big shot, very big shot. I remember one of my guru godbrothers at the time noting that he himself, the guru godbrother who was commenting about this, that he himself was and is, up to the present day, known not to be very hot on sadhana. Not much into sadhana, but very much into preaching. And he said that, you see, that this one who fell down, he was really into sadhana, but he wasn't so much into preaching. Actually, he was into preaching, but anyway, it's a complex story. So he said that he was using this as an example. That is, well, I don't take it the same way. I don't know exactly what he meant by that. Is that if you preach and don't do sadhana, that's good enough? And that's another thing we'll come to discuss also, that you have to preach and do your sadhana. But it does show that good sadhana in and of itself may not save us. It's really, we have to pray for the mercy of the devotees and the Supreme Lord. There but for the grace of God go I. Another way this can be understood is saying that, you know, you can say they've gone off, they have so many faults. You can say like that, but I also have so many faults. If someone wants to look, they can find so many faults. So better not to be proud and think I'm better than others. There's also, while we're taking a more generous view of guru fall downs, I'm talking about it in a general way now. There's also Srila Prabhupada's statement that there are many demons in this Krishna consciousness movement. From the context of that statement in Srimad Bhagavatam, I actually, it seems that he was maybe referring to one or more of his god brothers. One in particular. But that same god brother who Srila Prabhupada and many other of Srila Prabhupada's god brothers was very critical of, and it seems not without reason. When he passed away, Srila Prabhupada said he went back to Godhead. So what do we understand by this? Ashura Shakal Pailo Charan. Bhaktivinoda Thakur notes that so many demons attain the lotus feet of Krishna. So even if someone may be demoniac, basically we are all demoniac in this material world. We all have the demoniac mentality to a greater or lesser extent that Lord Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita. Ishvaro ham aham bhogi siddho ham balavan sukhi. I am God. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. This is our attitude, either directly expressed or latent within our heart. Even if we are superficially religious, we all have this mentality. So we come to Krishna consciousness to be purified of this demoniac mentality. But it may be that we accept a position which we're not ready for, or accept a role where there's much respect, power, not just respect, adulating, obsequiousness. It can act like an intoxicant, which takes over the consciousness. We've all seen intoxicated people, drunk, or on some other strong drug. There's lots of there's lots of social opprobrium against people using strong drugs. In my youth, the drug of choice was LSD, and there are others also, mescaline, amphetamines, and there are others now which are more popular apparently, but it strongly alters the conscious, therefore called psychotropic drugs. But alcohol also strongly influences the consciousness. It's just that somehow or other it's socially acceptable in the Western world. So it's like an intoxication. When you're drunk, you don't know what you're saying, what you're doing, depending on how drunk you are. And you lose control of your mind and your body and your bladder. You forget what you're supposed to be doing. So position, power, can be intoxicating in that sense. And the role of a guru certainly brings a lot of position and power and possibly wealth also. If one is given more money than one can use. And so the best thing is don't keep it. Don't keep money. Don't stash money in a bank account. Use it all for Krishna immediately. It's very dangerous otherwise. That's my policy anyway. Getting back to the point of gurus. We're not supposed to criticize them within the institute. If you leave, you can criticize as much as you like. And there may be not exactly social pressure, depending on who you associate with. If you go outside the institution, the unseen institutional walls of ISKCON, I'm talking about the hierarchy structure. If you place yourself outside that, you may be under social pressure, depending on who you associate with, you might be under pressure to speak very strongly against all gurus. Or the very concept of being gurus, of anyone being a guru. But within the institution, there is an etiquette and a social pressure for not criticizing gurus for doing, if they do things which if anyone else did, they would be criticized for doing because everyone can see it's wrong. Somehow or other, if you're a guru, it's okay to do things which others shouldn't do within the institution. It's seen like that. But if you're outside, then immediately they'll point out. It should be the other way around, that the guru set the highest example. Maybe for the reason they're not expected to do anything wrong, that when they do something which they really shouldn't do, then people say, well, they can't be doing something wrong. A guru cannot do anything wrong. This person is a guru. He appears to be doing something wrong. It must be an error of my judgment. But that's one way to apply the illogic. But the other thing could be that, well, now he's doing something wrong and he's appears to be disqualifying himself from the pristine standards of expected of a guru. But we see that even devotees who are very intelligent and very studied in Shastra, very sincere in their devotional practices, when it comes to gurus, especially their own guru, they just like suspend their intelligence. It's just something which you just cannot even start to think about, that there might be something wrong. Whereas again, I say, if it was someone else lower on the hierarchical rung, you'd immediately know, well, this is wrong. And the problem, a problem with that is that if a guru starts to do something, and there's so many things, I'll get around to some of these things. That if it becomes accepted that a guru can do certain things, and then someone who's high up within that hierarchy, the of guru, if guru has many disciples, and then there are some who are very senior, and they can also start to do that, And the whole concept of pure devotional service becomes distorted because someone's doing something which is not proper. Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, Pancharatra, Vithing, Vina, Aikantiki, Hare, Bhakti, Utpate, Aiva, Kalpate. Devotional service which is not enacted according to the injunctions given in the scriptures, the Shruti, the original Vedas, the Smriti, the corollary to the Vedas, which were the Puranas and the Mahabharata and Ramayana and the Pancharatra and all the rules in there. If you don't follow that, if it's not in line with that, then what's called devotional service will simply become a disturbance, because in the name of devotional service it will deflect people away or bring them into something which appears to be like devotional service, but which is not exactly to the point, which means you're not going to get exactly to the point of going back to Godhead. Now, that's a related topic of various subtle deviations within ISKCON, which I'm not going to get into now, which we're not supposed to talk about. If someone's in the position of guru and you become beyond question. But that's not what Shastra says. We may also not want to point out even that the obvious. Prabhupada said this, you're doing the opposite. There's something wrong there. Have you become more than Prabhupada? Your only claim to be a guru, or your only backup or support for being a guru, and the only role of being is in the service of Srila Prabhupada. And how can you do something different? It's just obvious. It should be obvious. If Srila Prabhupada says to do something and you do something exactly the opposite, there's something wrong. But often it may be intelligent devotees. They don't want to think about this, or not worse than, not only they will not want to think about it, but it may be that devotees, even they're very intelligent, but they don't want to point out the obvious and get into the nitty-gritty of what's going on, because it would cause a lot of disturbance to their spiritual life. It's easier to close your mind and go on chanting. Krishna's beautiful. Chant Hare Krishna. My guru is a pure devotee, and yeah, great. And chant Hare Krishna and be happy. And it would cause a lot of disturbance to the preaching also if we point out, you see, we're bringing people, we've brought them to be disciples, and we're promoting this person as a pure devotee, and it would cause a great disturbance within our own group and to our own spiritual life. We'd probably become, if you start to point things like that out, then you become persona non grata in your own group. And it can be tough trying to raise questions about things which really should be questioned. And you may think, well, you're just best, let's not talk about it. Things are going on pretty good. Things are going on well. Why cause a disturbance? Let everyone go on with their service. Why disturb everyone's mind? Everything gets... Also, if I point these things out, then I may be removed from my service, which I've been in so many years. I've been developing things. What will I do? Where will I go? Everything I've worked for all these years will be gone, and then what will I do? I can't go back to kami life. I won't have anywhere to go. So, tumbi chup, humbi chup. Hindi saying, you don't say anything, I won't say anything. But you can't come out openly and say, or do anything about it. So it's just, let's live peacefully. And even if we're not inspired by some of the points of our guru's disciple, by our guru's behavior, then anyway, what can we do? Living a lie. It shouldn't be. We come to Krishna consciousness for the truth. It may be on hearing this that some of my disciples start to microscopically analyze me. That's a risk I'm running by saying these things. Hare Krishna. I think I'll finish there on that, what shall I say, somber point. There's a lot more to say. Gradually. Vancha kalpa tarupyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nidhaya churnakang padayo nipatya kritva chakakushatametadaham ravimi he sadhava sakala eva vihaya durat Guranga Chandra Charane Kurutanuraga. Parivadatu Jano Yatatatava Nanumukarona.